was renewed yesterday. Let's continue and let's see what we can do today. So yesterday I formulated the test paragraph and the given problems. And today I'll show how associators help solving those problems, or at least partially solving. If I continue the numbering of last time, the first topic will be internal rates and associators. Of course, those objects already appeared yesterday in several talks. So just to fix notations, let me remind you that there is a family of the algebras Tn. So these are free Lie algebras that generate the Cij. I and j run from 1 to n. And with the relations Cii equal to 0, Cij equal to Cji. So, and then the non-trivial relation is for triples of distinct indices Cij plus Cik brackets Tj then equal to 0. And finally, for quadruples of distinct indices Cij, Ckl equal to 0. So all those relations are homogeneous, and therefore Cn is graded by grading given by the number of t's or the lattice t. Now, just to give you two examples. So T2 has only one generator. And let's say, as usual, you do it on field K of characteristic 0. So the algebra T2 is simply a one-dimensional Lie algebra with generator T1, 2. And T3 is represented in the following way. So it has a one-dimensional center spanned by the sum of generators T12, T23, T13, and then it's a direct sum with a free Lie algebra spanned, for instance, by T12 and T23. So this Lie algebra is a kind of Lie algebra of the pure Braid group, you can say, or Malzer Lie algebra of the pure Braid group. So this definition is needed to define associators. So an associator is a pair of an element of K and an element of phi, which is a group-like element in the associative algebra with two generators, or you can say an exponential of the Lie algebra with two generators. So this is an association. If the following conditions are satisfied, then here we're using Ferruccio's work, which allows to decrease the number of equations. So there is a normalization equation which says that phi is equal to 1, and we have to fix the coefficient in front of the degree 2 contribution. Here, I never know. I think, is it 124, the traditional normalization? Is it free? I think if mu is equal to 1, then this will be associated with Kappa and Konstantin.
U square, no?
Sorry?
U square, no?
Okay. But I take the root. And so that's one equation. And the other equation is the famous Pentagon equation. Let me write it down and then explain the notations. And then also let me apologize because I think I write it in a wrong way. Wrong meaning that I write it differently from the Ginfus notation. So for sure it's wrong, but kind of not used to it. So it's 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 1, 2, 3, 4 is equal to 5, 1, 2, 3. 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 2, 3, 4. And here the notation is as follows. First of all, back to the Lie algebra C, we introduce the following notation. For instance, C 1, 2, 3 is by definition C 1, 2 plus C 1, 3. And you remember these are braids, so geometrically it corresponds to so-called cabling of braids. So if you have a braid, then you can double one of the strands. So that's a geometric meaning of this notation. And then the other piece of notation for those phis, for instance, phi 1, 2, 3 in phi, which is an element of the exponential of the free Lie algebra with two generators, and as generators you now choose C1, 2 and C2, 3. Or, for instance, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4 is phi of C1, 2, 3, C3, 4. And so this last equation takes values in the exponential of the Lie algebra C4. Recall a theorem of Grinfeld, which plays a key role in what follows. So the theorem of Grinfeld says that the set of associators with mu equal to 1 is non-empty. So, in fact, in some sense, this is considered to be a difficult theorem. And so there are two different proofs in the original Grinfeld's paper. So one proof is by an explicit construction which uses the Knishnikov logic of connection, briefly mentioned yesterday by Benjamin. And another proof comes from the
So I disagree with you. There is only one proof, and it's the first one, and the second one just depends on the first. The second one needs the first to boot.
Why?
Because the Galois theory is this GT-GRT thing?
No. Okay,
we can talk later, but I think there is only one proof. Okay.
So we can discuss it. At least that's good that it raises an interest and
okay.
To be discussed.
Right. One proof is enough, of course. I'm not complaining.
One proof is usually enough. What is important, or what is perhaps interesting, right? This is a purely algebraic statement. And as far as I know, there is no proof which would go directly from this algebraic statement, and you use only the natural definitions and not go to other fields. So that's why it's considered to be difficult. And this theorem we're going to use in some minutes. So one more remark is as follows. Remember, yesterday we were talking of the Lie algebra of tangential derivations, so we were talking about it for Lie algebra with two generators, but we can also think of tangential derivations of the Lie algebra with n generators. And I would like to make a remark that the Lie algebra of infinitesimal grades, Tn, injects in a natural way into the CDR n. And let me denote this injection by theta. So the generator Cij here maps to a derivation theta of Tij. And what does this derivation do? It sends a generator of free Lie algebra with the index I, xi, into the bracket xi, xj. It sends xj into the bracket xj, xi. And it sends all the other x's to zero. And yesterday, Dror introduced a graphical notation or correspondence with trees or with directed trees for the elements of TDRF. So we can also say that this guy is equal to a sum of two very short trees. So one is I, the arrow going from I to J, and another one is the arrow going from J to I. So that's a different notation. Right. Okay. Well, basically, that's all background material that we need. Now, the plan is as follows. I'll state a number of theorems, and perhaps we can discuss those theorems a little bit, and then we can go to open problems. So more or less, we have all the background necessary. So. Equations and results. I promised there was no more notations or technicalities, but one more thing. You see here we have this idea of K limit. So how we can replace an index by a pair of indices or by a triple of indices. So the last thing we need is a similar kind of maps which relate TDRs with different number of generators. So let's say simplicial maps. So they send tangential derivations with a small number of indices into tangential derivations with a big number of indices. And an example is as follows. So let's say we have a tangential derivation for two letters, which is parameterized by A and B. So this means that A maps X to the bracket of X and A, and Y to the bracket of Y and B. And then we can map this guy to different derivations for the Lie algebra with three indices, with three letters. So for instance, we can map it to A of X, Y, B of X, Y, 0. And that I denote by U12. So this guy maps X to X, A, X, Y, Y, it maps to zero.
I'm sorry, can you explain this picture of Kaplan? Because all grades are pure, so...
Yeah, right. I mean, I should continue to... You're right. So this is a Lie algebra of pure grades. Mm-hmm. So I should complete my grade to be a pure grade. Now what happens here? Well, I'll just give you a formula. So it turns out that one should look at the sums of arguments, and also one does the natural thing for Kaplan. So 1 and 2 now behave as the same grade. And of course then what happens with x, so x moves to x, hx plus y, z, y maps to y, x plus y, z, and z maps to z, v, x plus y, z. I show you those formulas, and these are the formulas which work in practice, but there is a minor conceptual drawback in this story, because those Lie algebras Tn, they form an operand of Lie algebras, and so from this perspective, this Kaplan operation, this kind of blends in naturally into an operand structure, but unfortunately T their n, they don't form an operand. And, well, I don't know whether it's good or bad, or maybe we just don't know what is the right structure which we should assign to them. But this poses some conceptual questions. So there is a simplicial structure, but it doesn't fit into an operatic structure. Essentially, because those U12 and U123 that I wrote there, they don't necessarily have a vanishing Lebesgue. So that's an operatic structure would require U12 and U123 to have a vanishing Lebesgue, and they don't want to have a vanishing Lebesgue. Okay. So now, as promised, let's come to the description of results. So the first theorem I want to state is that we will show myself, and it says the following. Suppose we start with phi and associate with the coupling constant 1. And then there is a one parameter triangle of tangential automorphisms of the Lie algebra with two variables, let's call them f, such that the following equation is satisfied. Here, I use this theta of phi, so I first interpret phi as a function of t12 and t23, and then I map it by the theta map into some tangential automorphisms of three variables, and this is equal to f23, f123. So all these takes values in tangential automorphisms of three variables. And equations of this type are called twist equations, and They first showed up in the theory of quantum proofs, or in the theory of quantization of Levi algebras. And in the quantization of Levi algebras theory, this is a difficult equation. However, in this theory, it turns out to be an easy equation. So, in fact, I'll show you an explicit solution in a couple of minutes. But now let me come back to the statement. So I said there is a one parameter family of solutions. So those one parameter, this one parameter family, it looks as follows. So given one solution, other solutions are exponentials of some parameter s times theta of t12. S and K. So this is actually explicitly described line of solutions. So you choose any number S and you can move your solution along this line if you want. So now why are we interested in this observation? We are interested in it because that's the first statement. And the second statement is that F solves the Kashiwara Bell problem. So now, of course, for this to work, we need to know the existence of associators, right? Essentially, that's why we need the Dirichlet's theorem, because now we say, well, since we know the existence of associators, we can feed the Dirichlet associator, any Dirichlet associator you define, into this machine. So this equation solves, you get some element f, and this element f solves the KV problem. Notice also that this is a kind of, you can say, an instance of non-Abelian cohomology, because this equation basically says that phi is a cocycle in some kind of non-Abelian complex, you can say. So this is a product of five terms, and these terms, these are the right combinations for some function type co-boundary. And now the upper equation says that, this equation, the pentagon equation, roughly says that phi is a cocycle, and the twist equation says that phi is a co-boundary. Right? So that's basically what happens. Now, perhaps just one word, not really about the proof, but just to give you an intuition of how it works. So let me remind you that in the KV problem, the first equation that we deal with, so this is the problem of finding the tangential automorphism for Lie algebra with two variables, such that f of s plus y is equal to the Campbell Hausdorff series, and then there is some kind of second equation. Whatever, there is something which is more complicated, but let's not think about it for a moment. So you see, now let's look at the twist equation, assume that the twist equation is verified, and let's look at what this twist equation gives us if we apply it to x plus y plus z. So let's apply first the right hand side of the twist equation, f1 to 3, to x plus y plus z. So you see then what's going to happen when you apply the first automorphism. Well, this 2-3 story, it treats y plus z as one variable. So what it's going to do to you is going to produce the Campbell-Hausdorff series of x, y plus z. And then f 2-3, this is an automorphism which doesn't do anything to x, but which transforms y plus z into the general Hausdorff of y z. Right? So this is. Now, so this was the right hand side. Now, what about the left hand side? Well, the left hand side is F12, F123, C05, S plus 1 plus C. Now, it turns out that theta of any generator C simply kills X plus Y plus Z. So phi being a group-like element, theta of phi stabilizes X plus Y plus Z. It doesn't move. So basically, theta of phi, you can forget it when X moves on X plus Y plus Z. So then, the same story repeats, but in a different order. We get F12, Campbell Hausdorff of X plus Y plus Z. And this is equal to Campbell Hausdorff of x, y, z. But also, plus are equal to each other. Right? And that's what we were discussing yesterday. So that's the associativity. In this theory, that's the associativity of the Campbell Hausdorff form. Now, you see, if the twist equation works, and if the F is a solution of the KU problem, then we see that we get back the associativity of the Campbell-Hausdorff series. The problem is whether we can go the other way around. We do know that there is an associativity here. We know also the uniqueness of the Campbell-Hausdorff formula. Now we want to go back to this equation, right? And that's what is actually possible. So the actual proof is going to, so I showed you a kind of cheap direction, but now one has to go work a little bit to go back in a more difficult direction. Start with the associativity and uniqueness of the Campbell-Hausdorff formula and go back to the twist equation. So in fact, idea of proof is Campbell-Hausdorff. Go back to the twist equation.
Sorry, I thought in your paper you had a proof, I mean a completely different proof more in the style of Grinfeld. I mean an iterative proof solving that equation directly.
Yeah, that's right. So that's basically, you see, when I summarize a proof in one line, right?
That's how you think of the proof.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. But I mean, this iterative proof, that's basically asking whether you can build such an F, and then at the same time, whether you would solve step by step the first equation, right? And this is important.
Using the cohomology.
Yeah, right. There is some small cohomology problem that we solve in order to. But we discussed those cohomology problems yesterday. There is only cohomology in degree 2. Mm-hmm. And right. So now the next theorem gives an explicit solution for. Right? We denote that there is a whole line of solutions. And now we'll write down one explicit solution for this problem. So next theorem. So this is due to explicit formulas for lambda and mu. So value of x, y is given explicitly in terms of the associator. So this is phi x minus y and mu, well, exponential minus x plus y over 2 phi y, right, y minus x minus y exponential y over 2. So so there is a completely explicit formula for this solution, and so these formulas were suggested to us by Dan and Kalak. And in fact, his motivation was that he showed that this formula solves this first equation of Kashiwara theorem, that they solve the equation that x plus y is transformed into the Campbell-Hausdorff series. And then, well, after some work, we were able to prove that it actually solves the full twist equation. Right, so there is, I must say, so this is in a certain contrast which what happens in the theory of quantization of Lie-by algebras. So here, the twist equation is a difficult equation. It admits many solutions. And here, the twist equation turns out to be a relatively simple equation. It admits just more or less just one solution up to this simple risk area. And one can write this solution in an explicit way. Now, let me continue with another theorem, which now goes to the Bruguière problem. So you see, so these are two theorems which settle the Kashiwara wave problem. And of course, one could further discuss the implications for the Duclos theorem and other story, but maybe we should better go to Bruguière problem and then see what are the open problems remaining. So the theorem number 3. Right, let me state it and then say a little bit about how we got it. So assume that phi now is an even associator with Kaplan constant 1. So then there is a unique tangential automorphism F such that the following twist equation is satisfied. So F123, theta of phi is equal to H F123. Of course, I should say what is H. So H here is a tangential automorphism which maps x to x, y to y, and with z it does the following. It maps it to h xy minus 1 z h of xy. And remember this h of xy function, that's something that we saw in the Rouguière's theory. And I should remind you that exponential x, exponential y is exponential w xy times h of xy. So that's the function which typically twists things. So this is a kind of twisted version of the twist equation. Well, now, right. Now maybe we can combine it with the second statement. So you see there is this unique F, and we can again write an explicit formula for this F, or more exactly for F minus 1. So F minus 1 maps x to lambda x, lambda minus 1, and it maps y to mu minus 1, where lambda is again phi of x minus x minus y, and mu is phi of x minus x minus y, phi of x1. So now the solution is unique, so there is you don't need to add any lines and so on. And the last statement is that f solves part 1, equation 1 and equation 2 of the Ruvier problem. So remember that Ruvier 1 is similar to Kashiwara-Ruvier 1, but it has W instead of CH on the right-hand side. So this is a factorization property for the function e of xy, and then 3 would be a factorization property for the function SE, for the super e function. And this one we don't know how to solve. We'll return to the discussion in a moment. Maybe I should say something about the authorship of this of this theorem. So basically it came out different parts of the discussion with many people in Geneva after we have stopped. So we were talking to Martin Post, my student. Maybe one more result. One more result to add before we go to open problems. So remember, there was the story of the Ruvier function E being symmetric. So this means this implies the Duclos proposition or Duclos theorem on the commutativity of a certain quotient of the universal Gaussian algebra. So the companion theorem for this one is as follows. So introduce an SE function with a tilde, which is given by the superdeposition of F. So now we're using the notation of the previous theorem, and we add to it one half of this super alpha cocycle. Maybe I should remind you that Sj integrates super divergence and Sa integrates super alpha, where super alpha of u equal to Ag is simply equal to the super trace of A. So we modify with this, in terms of harmonic analysis, with this our invariant differential operators by some line bundle, and that corresponds to this twist. So then, as we go x, y, so this super E function becomes symmetric for all those solutions that I described. So this of course again gives a new derivation of the Duclos theorem, and apparently, well, from what Charles was telling me yesterday, it also gives a little bit of new information about the Ruvier's E function, that it can be written down as a difference of traces over P and over H. So which was apparently, as I learned yesterday, a conjecture of Fourier. Mm-hmm. So now probably we can confirm this conjecture. Well, okay. But I guess one night is maybe too short a period to say it with confidence. Okay. So basically, you see, that's the set of theorems you get from applying the associated techniques to those Lie theorem problems. Now, let me perhaps, I have four theorems. I don't know which ones I can sacrifice. Maybe those theorems on this part of the blackboard. And I want to speak a little bit about all the problems. So there is one big open problem in this KV's theory, and it looks like there is one open problem in Rogier's, also a big open problem in Rogier's theory. So the problem number one is as follows. So I just array an explicit form of a solution. So here, this theorem gives us solutions of the KV problem. And the question is whether all solutions of KV problem are this form. One can actually formulate it in a more concrete fashion. And here, perhaps, let me, since this talk is close to its end, let me make a jump and let me speak about this Lie algebra GRC that we haven't formally introduced in this talk. So assume that psi, so I just reformulate the same problem in a more concrete fashion. So suppose we have psi, an element of GRC. So there is a map nu which injects GRC into tangential derivations with two variables. So this map is mapping to nu of psi equal to psi x minus x minus y, psi y minus x minus y, right? We already saw those combinations of letters just some minutes ago. And in fact, it's injected into a subalgebra of TDL2, which we can characterize as follows. So these are tangential derivations such that they kill x plus y. So this was called special derivations yesterday, quite wrong. And the divergence of u factorizes. So one conjecture which would imply that all solutions of the form that we described is as follows, that this Lie algebra here, we call it for whatever reasons KV2 cap, is equal to A T12 plus the image of GRC. Well, probably many of you have heard this story, but well, for those of you who didn't, so this statement is very tempting for numerical verification. That's because all those Lie algebras are graded objects, so you can try to check it degree by degree. And Shar, his friend and collaborator, Lepauko, they did a very extensive numerical verification of this conjecture, and up to degree 19, it seems to work. So, but of course, we don't know whether 19 is a small number or or it's a big number, right? Maybe it's a very small number, and the deviation starts in degree 120. So we don't know, but at least that's one interesting open question, and it's a bit parallel to the question that perhaps Professor Ferruccio will speak about later today, because there is another. So this gives you an upper bound, an estimate on the Lie algebra J of C. So there is another upper bound which comes from numbers theory. So this is the Lie algebra DMR, and so it opens up a kind of all kinds of questions whether GLT is, whether this bound is exact, whether the numbers theoretic bound is exact, whether one can compare least theoretic and numbers theoretic bounds. So, okay, we don't know, but it's certainly a very exciting field and very exciting questions.
What is the rank in dimension 19?
What is the what?
Rank, the dimension of?
Oh, what is the dimension?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, okay, let me give you an indirect answer. So there is a famous conjecture due to Dillon and Greenfeld. Which states that the Lie algebra G of T is a free Lie algebra with one generator in each four dimensions starting from three. Now, okay, you can calculate what it gives in degree 19, and that's what one gets from the calculation.
Plus the center.
Sorry?
Plus the center.
Yeah, but the center is in degree one. But I mean, this will be right. There is this difference between GRT and this theoretic. But it's in degree one. Now, the last thing I wanted to say today, so that's this second problem. And it's related to this group here. Fourier theory. So suppose we have an even associator. So we can map it to this F, to this unique F, unique tangential automorphism, and we can apply a super Jacobian. Right. So we get some kind of expression which we call. So this is the super E function over here. And on the other hand, we can map phi to theta of phi. This is also a tangential more than these three variables. And we can map it to super Jacobian. So of course these two functions are related. So there is an equation which relates these two functions. So well, you see, this gives you a kind of interesting, or maybe not so interesting, but it gives you a meaningful function on this set of associators. So this super Jacobian of F or a super Jacobian of theta of phi. So the question is, what does this function tell you? So two concrete ways to prove this question. So one concrete way is as follows. Is there a phi such that this super Jacobian of theta of phi will vanish? Is it possible to choose, because now when we change the associator, this function will change. Is there such an associator which would help this function equal to zero? Well, I mean, that now it believes on your face or your philosophical grounds. If you believe that all associators are more or less the same and there is no distinguished point there, which is probably true, then this should be impossible, right? Because it would distinguish some associator. But who knows? Maybe just as a remark that J of theta phi, the ordinary Jacobian, vanishes for all associators. So there is no such problem. Another way to state the same, more or less the same equation.
Sorry, so, I'm confused. It will distinguish a unique associator?
Maybe, no, maybe not. Maybe
so then it doesn't contradict anything, right? There are several subclasses of associators.
Okay, so, maybe it's okay. I don't know. So another way to put the same question. We have this super divergence, which is now a map. You can restrict it to a map from the even part of GRT into super traces of QVR levels. So this is one pos cycle, and one meaningful question is as follows: whether this guy has a kernel, or whether perhaps it's an injective map. So this is some kind of new pos cycle on some big chunk of GRT.
So if you give it psi to the computer?
Okay, you see, I still have this part of the blackboard, and I'll show you what I computed. You see, unfortunately, it's not to show what I computed up to now. So here is an example. Suppose that we have this S divergence of, and let's apply it to the bracket of sigma 3 and sigma 5. Note that this is the element of GRT even of lowest degree. So the lowest degree is 8, because we have generators in degrees 3, 5, and so on. So for sigma 3, sigma 5, we can compute it. And I didn't compute all of it, but it starts with the super trace of the commutator x squared y x to the fourth power y, and plus higher degrees in y. But what is important is the fact that this guy is not zero, because one could suspect or hope that maybe still it would be vanishing on GRT even. But I mean, already on the first element which is available, it doesn't vanish. So for sure, the kernel is not the full GRC even. Now, is there a kernel? Maybe there is no kernel, how it works? Well, I must say, at the moment, it's quite open. So this is some kind of new post cycle on GRC, and what it teaches to us, it remains to be seen. Maybe I should stop. There must be a way to go from the universal biological solution.
I would like just to make a small bridge between Dror's talk and what was implicit here, the simplicial structure. So Dror's philosophy was that if you have something in groups, it goes to graded objects. And here, in the picture which was arranged, there exists a simplicial structure of pure braids on surfaces, in particular for torus. And when you are passing to graded objects, this simplicial structure, which is geometric by nature, by deleting and scaling, described, it passes to Lie algebras. So this is an example. And you see that this simplicial structure in Lie algebras, in your Lie algebra classical case, but it also exists in the case that Benjamin described for torus, as well as for Lie algebras for any surface. Just an example how this passes.
But I mean here, in this geometric case, it's more, it's an operatic structure. And that's what, as I mentioned, that's what we're missing a little bit on this C del side. Or we don't know, maybe perhaps there should be a different axioms.
About situation that so the
this guy solves it, but I mean, roughly speaking, when you deal with a free group, as a subgroup of pure braids, right? Then what we're doing in our proof, right? We choose generators of roughly speaking. So these guys are generators of the. Of the free subgroup of the pure braid group, and then and this choice of generators, it plays the role in our formulas, because the identification of the pro-uniform completion of the free group and the exponential of the corresponding free Lie algebra is not canonical, right? It depends on the choice of generators. Now, in this theory, there is an involution which is, roughly speaking, the reflection in the mirror, which is located along the blackboard. Therefore, this choice of generators is not possible. And one has to choose, for instance, this guy and this guy. And one has to interpret it in an appropriate way. And roughly speaking, this gives a different way of identifying Fn with the exponential small fn, and that's why it gives a different formula. I was also kind of a little bit scared that since we already have one canonical construction, right, then it kind of shows that no other constructions are possible. So it looks like that's the place where you can change the construction. You have to change the choice of generators or the free group.
Okay,
the
last question of Sean.
About the GT setting, this element changes phi dz bar.
Yes.
Is there an interpretation on the KD side of that element?
Only a GRT element. A GRT element which would change phi dz and phi dz bar. Well, I didn't speak about it, but basically GRT acts on solutions of the KP problem. And this action is given by an explicit formula. So GRT acts, and this action is simply this one. Or maybe I should better say nu of G times F. No, I think it's on the right. So GRT acts simply by a right multiplication on those f's. And whenever you have an element of GRT which changes one associated to the other, then you just have this additional part of the twist to add. So this GRT element, as all the others, it would simply act. In some way here, the action is easier. The action on associators is given by this relatively complicated Dreyfus formula. The action on twists is simply by right translations. No, because there is, a priori, we don't know any special meaning for phi kz, except for the fact that it's available, while other associators are perhaps not available. Right? I mean, do you know any conceptual meaning for phi kz? In contrast to the others?
The thing about distinguished associator, because it's simply possible that you will take care of the terms of being specific and unequal, that is once again instead of the so, and those people can unequal.
Yeah, maybe, but right. So, but at least one should explicitly state what in which way phi kz is distinguished, besides the fact that we have a formula.
Okay, maybe a few remarks. When you want to try to work in simple spaces, I learned a long time ago from the rules, that all things can be done in a triple system. So maybe it would be a good idea to work on P, just the term spaces, switch from the bracket to the future bracket in ordinals. And the second thing is that do you think that there are some even variables, all the variables in these spaces, because I worked a long time on symmetric spaces, and at the end I think that we need some even old variable to understand symmetric spaces. Super variable.
Oh, super variable.
Yeah.
I'm at the other pole. My experience with working with symmetric spaces, as I said, it's about 2 to 3 weeks, right? So, I'm not sure I'm in the position to.
Because there is some analogy between spaces and supergroups. Supergroups are symmetric spaces. And the third remark is that the visual theorem is not true in the category of super symmetric spaces. But this maybe it's not good news because as Konsevich said, if you have some universal formula, this formula is true for greater spaces. So. I don't know how to deal with this example of Cauchy. The Dreyfus theorem is not true for super symmetric spaces. Actually, for a supergroup is a super symmetric space. That's a problem.
I cannot comment, but I mean, part of your vision is already realized. You see, we have this super Jacobian and super trace. whatever this means. So kind of, you already made one step. No super variables yet. But the S letter, it already shows up on the blackboard.
Okay, let's have a short coffee break. I'll tell you about it.